Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, 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 oh. Wake up. Time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Gotta change it, yeah. Just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we're just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me. Need a little help, y'all. Yes, I do. Need a little help. Say it, boy. Need some help, y'all. Change the world.
That's right. Wake up, everybody. Wake up. So MPH Radio today. Today is the 11th day of December 2021. We welcome you to MPH Radio as the voice of MPH. We're going to be discussing a very interesting topic and theme today, something that is much needed but very seldom discussed within the realms of our communities, particularly our underserved communities. Our major feature today will be on human rights. Our theme is human rights, community development, and justice. Human rights, community development, and justice. How does human rights play into this whole scheme of things as we talk about developing our community, our people, and this quest for justice and equality? We have some very special guests who will be giving their perspective and sharing their perspective on what is human rights, how we can identify it, and how it may be having an impact on the various sectors of our society and our people. But before we get to our guests right now, what we're going to do is, first start off, like always, we're going to give you something to think about. we're going to talk about this concept of what is freedom, followed by MPH Black Mini Facts, and then we'll take on the subject, human rights, community development, and justice, with our special guest, and we'll close our program out, special message to the community by our brother Alex Joyner. So that's the order for the day, so let's get started at this point in time. As we talk about, let's give you something to think about. What is freedom? Well, we have a couple of definitions of concept of freedom that was given by some historical figures that you may have been exposed to and you may have not. But when we talk about freedom, you know, freedom is a concept that has been often discussed, fought over, died over, and people continue to fight over this concept of freedom. So we won't take a few minutes a day just to give you something to think about in terms of what is freedom. Now, according to W.E.B. Du Bois, he once stated that freedom is the cost of liberty. It's less than the price of repression. Let me repeat again. He said the cost of liberty is less than the price of repression. That was one way how he phrased freedom, Brother Du Bois. That was another way of looking at freedom from Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American U.S. Supreme Court member or judge. And Thurgood stated that in recognizing the humanity of our fellow beings, we pay ourselves the highest tribute. Let me repeat that. In recognizing the humanity of our fellow beings, we pay ourselves the highest tribute. What do y'all think about that concept of freedom? And last is by Dr. Mae Jemison, the first African-American female astronaut. And her concept of freedom was never be limited by other people's limit imagination. Never be limited by other people's limited imagination. So we gave you three concepts of freedom. I want you to think about that. And at this point in time, what we're going to do right now, we can go into our Black Mini Facts. Make sure you have your pen and paper. For this week, from the 5th to 11th, Susan MPH Radio, she's going to share with you some Black MPH Black Mini Facts. So what we're going to do right now, bring Susan in. Susan, we'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. And you can share with our listening audience what are your Black Mini Facts for this week's program. Susan, welcome to MPH.
Good evening. Today's Black Mini Fact is coming from the PRSP calendar of 2021. And the first one starts with December the 5th, which was the first All-African People's Conference held in Accra, Ghana in 1958. And also on that date, we had the National Council of Negro Women founded in 1935. And on Tuesday, December the 7th, we had Antonio Maceo, Cuban freedom fighter, died in 1896. And on the 8th of December, Roberto Sabique was born in 1925. And on the 9th, we had Tanzania Political Independence Day, was in 1961. And the last mini fact for December the 11th is on is the Namibia Women Day. Dozens of women were killed and wounded during mass protests in 1954. And the last final one for today is Popular Movement for the Liberation of Angola, MPLA, was established in 1956, and I've just given you a few mini facts for the week of December the 5th through the 11th.
Thank you, Susan, for your MPH Black Mini Facts. And right now, we're going to go to a station break with music with a message. And when we come back, we're going to entertain our theme today, human rights, community development, and justice. You're listening to MPH Radio. Thank you.
believe the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children laugh. Everybody's searching for a hero. People need someone to look up to. I never found anyone who fulfilled my needs. A lonely place to be. And so I learned to depend on me.
That's right. We found the greatest love for them all. You have to love your people, love yourself, and love humanity. We welcome you back to MPH Radio. You're listening to the voice of MPH Radio. And right now, what we're going to do, we're going to make our transition to the theme today, which will deal with human rights. Our theme is human rights, community development, and justice. We have invited some very special guests to give their perspective and to educate us on this important concept of human rights, what it is, how do we recognize it, and why we should maybe consider the importance of looking at the issues and their problems from a human rights perspective and not necessarily a civil rights one. So anyway, at this point in time, we'd like to bring in our first presenter. We will share her perspective and give us a brief history of what is human rights, how it came to existence, and she's going to talk about human rights from a perspective in terms of how it's impacting youth and children. So right now, we have with us Sister Camille Shungo. She's a member and representing the Alliance for Global Justice. We'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. Welcome, Camille.
Hi. We thank you so much, my brother, for having me on today. Because what I'm going to talk about is of critical importance to each and every person on the face of the planet, and particularly those of us who call ourselves warriors for justice. First, of all, let me start by saying Happy Human Rights Day to everybody. Yesterday, actually December 10th, was Human Rights Day across the world. And that's an important thing because human rights belong properly to every human being on the face of the planet. Doesn't matter whether you're born in Moscow or Beijing or Atlanta. Human rights are your natural rights. They're inherent to every human being. Doesn't make any difference what your race, your sex, your nationality, your sexual orientation, what country you live in, what language you speak, what god you worship or no god at all, how much money you have, or anything else. Human rights accrue to you because you are born and breathing. Human rights means the right to life, the right to liberty, the right to freedom from slavery and torture, the right to have your opinion and express it, the right to have a job, the right to be educated, the right to clean air and water and good food, and many other things. You get them because you're alive. Now, human rights are distinct from civil rights. We all remember the civil rights movement. We sang and we prayed and we swayed and we said, make us equal under the law in this country of our capture. Make us have the same rights that other people have in this country. But those are civil rights, like the right to vote, the right to hold office, the right to own property. Your five-year-old can't vote. Your six-year-old does not have the right to become mayor. Your 12-year-old does not have the right to go out and buy a house. Those are things that the government actually has not only a right but a responsibility to control. But they are different from human rights. I would say that when we started struggling and protesting and working for our civil rights, what we were really working for was our human rights, our rights to life, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, our rights for liberty, the hundreds and thousands of people locked up behind bars in this country, often for no crime other than being who they are, the right to have a job. People do we have who cannot find meaningful work or who are working three crappy jobs and still not making enough money to survive? The right to an education, not just the right to go to school alongside white children, but the right to be educated thoroughly and completely and to the best of the ability of the country in which we live. And frankly, very few Americans in this country, by the way, have the right to education, because even if you manage to go through school and graduate, you come out with so much crippling debt that you can't survive. I'm saying that and I am not alone in this, that the United States is guilty of gross violations of the human rights of people inside its own nation. Now let's talk about outside of its borders. This is the way the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights define this. Ask yourself how many people across the globe are suffering at the hands of the United States government, the United States military, the United States State Department, and the United States economic power to be deprived of their human rights. So in 1948, the United Nations, which was in large part created by the USA, had a proclamation and an adoption of a Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It's the first time across the globe that countries recognize that people have human rights that are innate to them and should be enforced and should be available to everybody. 48 nations have adopted it. Guess who has not? The USA, the people that have a statue standing in the harbor on stolen land, by the way, or stolen waters to be precise, talking about liberty. The same nation that says we are the bastion of democracy, We are the shining beacon on the hill to which all other people on the planet can look and say, yeah, this is what freedom looks like. The USA has not signed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and it doesn't want to. Now, the reason for that is pretty simple and pretty clear. If you were alive in 1948, could you get on the bus and sit in the front seat? If you were alive in 1948 in Mississippi, could you vote? I'm talking to my African sisters and brothers on this call. If you were alive in 1948, could you check into the Hilton Hotel downtown? If you're alive in 2021, those rights are legally yours, but actually not in reality yours. You walk in the front door of the Hilton and the security guards will come to attention. So even though we have civil rights, we do not have the human rights to exist as free people in this nation. Some American presidents have tried. Jimmy Carter actually tried to get the Universal Declaration of Human Rights signed, and of course he failed. And much of the pushback was from southern states in which Jim Crow, even though it wasn't the law of the land, is in the land. And just like it's a fact in Jackson, Mississippi, the lack of those rights in America is a fact in Boston, Massachusetts, in Chicago, in Detroit, and other places that never had legal slavery or haven't had it for a long time. So we're seeing a contradiction here on the part of the United States of America. We're seeing the contradiction that we say one thing out of one side of our mouths and do something else right out in the open. Nobody's trying to hide it. The fact of the matter is we're almost to 2022 and Jim Crow is over as a legal thing, but the United States is just as racially segregated at the end of 2021 as it was in 1951. The wealth gap between white citizens and all people of color, but particularly black people, is wider than at any time since the end of the Civil War. And we all know about the killings of civilians by law enforcement and by good white citizens who are just taking upon themselves to execute people who offend them with the color of their skin. Brutality. We see hundreds of thousands, even millions of people turning out into the streets of cities all over the world to say, USA, stop killing black people. That lot of good it's done us because it happens every day. I want to go one step further than to say the U.S. is guilty of human rights violations. I'm saying, and I think you'll agree, that the United States of America is guilty of genocide. Let me say that again. The USA is guilty of genocide. What's genocide? It means any act that's committed with the intention to destroy, either in whole or in part, a group of people, a national or ethnic or racial or religious group. It involves killing members of the group. Africans suffered our own Holocaust in the Atlantic crossing, the years of slavery, and the years since. It's causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. Have y'all read Dr. Joy DeGruy's Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome? She documents it well. It's deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life that are calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Mass incarceration, miseducation, police brutality, the criminal justice system, healthcare apartheid, environmental injustice. I could go on. It's imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. I'm not talking about the provision of birth control. That's healthcare, and every woman has the right to control her own fertility. I'm talking about the fact that the rate of maternal deaths among African women in the United States is as high as it is in some of the poorest countries on the face of this planet. In the richest country in the world, more African women die in simple childbirth than they do in some place like Ecuador, which is poor, Angola, which is poor, Another measure of genocide, according to the United Nations, is forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. Right now, in my home, I was late getting on this call because three young children were wandering up and down my block. They are runaways from a foster care system that has abused them physically, emotionally, economically, and in every other way. Snatch them from their parents' arms and thrust them into hell. And if that ain't genocide, my people, then somebody doesn't know what the proper definition of genocide is. Now let's talk about the United States transgressions against human rights across the globe. They're as high now as they ever have been. The United States, it's 20 years since the end of the Cold War, I mean, and about 75, 76 years since the end of World War II. But the USA still has more troops at more than 800 locations in foreign lands. The USA is occupying more than 800 locations on soil that does not belong to them. They have hundreds of thousands of troops that are occupying foreign lands and at the point of a gun forcing other sovereign nations to toe the line that the U.S. draws in the sand. And then if you dare to buck up, well, drone bombs are always an option, but even if they don't bomb you, they are sanctions. The sanctions are different degrees, and nations that don't do what the U.S. wants them to do are subject to economic warfare. We're talking about the only two European countries on my list of this are the Balkans and Belarus, but let me name some of the others, and you tell me if you see a common thread here. Burma, Burundi, the Central African Republic, Congo, Hong Kong, Iran, Iraq, Lebanon, Libya, Mali, Nicaragua, North Korea, Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan, Syria, Venezuela, Yemen, and Zimbabwe. Do you see a common thread here? Picture the people who live in those nations and tell me what color they are. And now tell me that ain't genocide. When little babies in Iraq can't get polio vaccine because the United States won't allow it to be shipped there. When women in Cuba are dying of breast cancer for the first time since the revolution at high rates. And you know why? Because the machine that performs mammograms, the exam that's necessary to identify cancer in its early stages, they're old. They're pre-Soviet era machines, and the only place that makes the parts to fix them is the USA and Germany. And the USA won't send the parts to Cuba and Germany because it's an ally and in large part dependent economically and militarily upon the USA, also won't ship those parts. So our sisters in Cuba are dying of breast cancer because there is no machine to detect it, because the United States decided. We're seeing the United States go in and overturn elections. And if they can't overturn them by doing some funky backroom stuff, well, drone bombs and blockading the harbor and outright attacking are always on the agenda for the USA. And Lord help you if you happen to have black gold underneath the dirt in your country. That is pretty much a recipe for being invaded or controlled in other ways by the United States of America. I accuse the United States of gross violations of human rights and of genocide. I want to point something out. Lest you think that this is only a problem for us, the fact is injustice does not just affect the people who are its direct targets. It creates a world that's more dangerous, less sustainable, uglier, less capable of reaching its potential. The cure for cancer is likely locked up in the brain of one of the boys in my living room who has been cast into the dungeon of foster care. It'll never be revealed. Those boys aren't being educated. Those boys aren't being nurtured. Those boys aren't being encouraged. The cure for our energy shortage might be locked into the mind of a little girl who's going to a school that has no certified teachers and no textbooks. That's the case with the schools in my neighborhood. The genocide being committed against African people, in fact, hurts everybody. Now, how much hatred do you have to have in your soul to do, as my grandmama used to say, to cut off your nose to spite your face? And I say, this is the most egregious expression of human behavior that you can imagine. We stand up and we shout, no justice, no peace. And by that we mean we are promising that we're going to continue to fight. But you know what else that is? That's a lament. Y'all remember laments? You went to church. A lament is a dirge that talks about the pain you're suffering and begs for relief. It talks of, we're singing of brilliance that's been buried and potential that's been discarded and happiness that is unrealized and liberty denied and lives cut short and made miserable and brutal by racism, by injustice, by human rights abuses, and the intentions of genocide. I want you to reflect on that on this day, on this week of human rights. And I'm asking you if you will rededicate yourself to the cause of justice. I'm also going to beg your permission here to say and do one more thing. I am a representative of the Alliance for Global Justice, which is exactly what it says, a global coalition of people working for justice, working against neoliberal capitalist oppression and aggression. And we are creating or have created the Lucy Parsons Popular Human Rights School. Lucy Parsons, in case you didn't know, around the turn of the last century, was an African woman whose parents had been born into slavery, who was a leader of the labor movement and a leading anarchist of her time. The purpose of the Lucy Parsons School is to provide training and to build schools for grassroots activists to organize for transformative change. We don't want a piece of the pie. We want to dump the pie in the garbage where it belongs and build a different way of being, a way that is not based on capitalism, on exploitation, on sexism, on racism, on religious prejudice, on phobias and oppression of all kinds. We want to end human rights violations in and by the United States. And we're asking y'all to join the movement to increase our capacity for creating change, because it's only through study, which you all engage in every time this program comes on, it's only through study and solidarity that we can increase our capacity to create change. And so I am inviting any of you who are activists or who feel that you have something to contribute to this to reach out to me, and I will give you information on that in a second, to help us build a movement for justice and prepare our communities and develop leadership and to teach, to study, and to, in the end, develop a stronger and a more unified network of people's leadership to struggle for human rights and for liberation. We ain't talking about no, we shall overcome. We're talking about building capacity to change this monstrous system that has inflicted uncountable numbers of human rights violations and uncountable atrocities of a genocidal nature on us and so many other people. One of the other things we're doing at AFGJ is to develop a database and a series of reports that reports that anybody can fill out and submit for human rights violations, whether it's individual, something done to a person or a couple people, or whether it is a more universal community-wide thing, like they closed our schools and sewage is running down the streets, as it is in parts of Mississippi right now, and Alabama and Michigan and other places that I can name. And that information will be available to all, so that not only will we know what our sisters and brothers are facing, but so that when we mount a struggle to change this, we will have the data that helps create foundational change. I would love for you all to be in solidarity with us as we pursue this Lucy Parsons popular human rights school. But most of all, I would ask you to renew your commitment for liberty. Renew your commitment to human rights. Renew your opposition to these monstrous behaviors, and to rededicate yourself to bring it about. Might not happen while I'm still sucking air, but I got grandbabies to fight for. How about you? I want to thank you very much. I have to say, I'm going to have to jump off this call because, as I said, I've got three young brothers here who have suffered the worst of the worst, innocent children. And at another time, Leah said I can come in and talk about the way that the child welfare system is part of the criminal injustice system, because it's a direct pipeline to prison, and it is genocidal. And by the way, one of the young men who's sitting in my living room is Caucasian, but he has the disadvantage of being poor. So, you know, injustice, actually, even though it is principally directed at black and brown people, indigenous people, everybody's fair game if you ain't rich, white, and preferably male. And that is why it's genocidal, and that is why it is a dedication to human rights. My people, will you fight with me?
And yes, they will, if you can tell us how to get in touch with you in the Alliance for Global Justice.
Oh, yeah, that would have been good. Okay. So our website is afgj.org. That stands for Alliance for Global Justice. You can also Google Alliance for Global Justice, but it's afgj.org/HRS, which stands for Human Rights School. That'll get you straight to us. And my email is Camille@AFGJ.org. That's Camille@AFGJ.org. We need you on board. Solidarity doesn't look like everybody marching in lockstep together. Solidarity looks like everybody doing what you can with what you got where you are today. Because this monster is so big. An octopus has far fewer tentacles than U.S. oppression, than global capitalism, than neoliberalism, to militarization. But you got to chop those tentacles off. You got to start chopping at the one that's wrapped around your neck. Join me, sisters and brothers.
And to our sister Camille, we'd like to thank you for making your contribution to today's theme, human rights, community development, and justice. We'd like to thank you.
Thank you very much, Brother Lee. As always, you present thoughtful, thought-provoking, and intelligent and useful information, and send out this call for justice. If we make it loud enough, many people will hear and respond.
Sound good to us, my sister. We thank you again. And to our listening audience, and to my audience, this is MPH Radio. We're going to take a quick station break with music with a message. And when we come back, we will continue the discussion and give you another understanding of this from a different aspect of your community on this issue of human rights, community development, and justice. We'll be bringing on our brother, Jihad Adu Mumin. He will give his perspective on this question of human rights as he represents the organizer for the journal movement. So we'll be right back. Those who are going nowhere, this is Missing Pages of History.
Lee, can you hear me?
Thank you. we are here. Bombs over Baghdad, trying to get something we never had. Let's start with a good dad. So real, but it's so sad. And while we burning this incense, we gon' pray for the innocent. Cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about Chi-Town. Let's talk about Gaza. Let's talk about Israel. Right now with Israel. Let's talk Nigeria. In the mass hysteria. Yeah, our souls are brought together so that we could love each other. Brother, we are here. We are here for all of us. Save the nation with no support for education. Cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about our part. My heart touch your heart. Let's talk about living. Had enough of dying. That's what we all about. Let's do more giving. Do more forgiving. Yeah. Our souls are brought together so that we could love each other. Sister, we are here. We are here for all of us. We are here for all of us. It's why we are here. Why we are here. We are here. We are here for all of us. We are here.
That's right. We are here. MPH Radio, we are here. We are here for you. We are here to speak to the powerless and the powerful. We are here to speak to the powerless and the powerful. We are here to be a voice of the forces and those underserved communities. We are here to continue filling our important missing pages of history, and we ask you to come and join us. If you'd like to support this program and become a member of MPH Radio and support us, please email us at mphradio@yahoo.com, and we will respond back to you how you can become an active member and participant and help us build this radio institution to be a voice for our people globally. As we said today, we're going to be talking about human rights, a very important concept, a very important topic that is having an impact on our communities globally. And to give his perspective on this concept of human rights, community development, and justice, we will now turn the mic over to our brother, Jihad Adul Mumin. He's an organizer and national organizer president of the Jericho Movement. And he will come and share his perspective and enlighten us on the importance of understanding our problems from a perspective of human rights. Brother Jihad, welcome to MPH Radio.
Brother Lee, welcome, Brother Lee, and thank you so much for having me, and assalamu alaikum to everyone. And I thank the Sister Camille who came on before me. I don't know if she's still on to listen with the kids in the living room, but I think she gave an excellent, clear breakdown of human rights vis-a-vis civil rights and a lot of the history of our movements and our pains. And most importantly, ending up on the reality that we are Black, Brown, and Indigenous people are victims of genocide in the United States. And I want to elaborate on that just a little more. My presentation is not as long as Sister Camille's, but I do have some valuable information to share with you and some boots on the ground actions that's taking place that the listeners may want to take part in. So as Brother Lee said, I am the national chairperson of the Jericho Movement, started in 1998. And if anybody's listening in front of their laptop or taking notes, it's www.thejerichomovement, very simple, .com. And you can see a list of the freedom fighters that we represent, many that have been incarcerated for 50 years or more. And so you'd be amazed of who's on there, a lot from the Black Panther Party, the Black Liberation Army, the American Indian Movement, anti-imperialists, water protectors, planet protectors. And so we represent them. And when we say represent them, we uphold their names so that people will remember them, who they are, what they stood for, and what they fought for. We also, when we say represent them, we provide real assistance to them, monetary assistance, all the way from commissary money to paying for lawyers on their cases, paying for family visits. We visit them ourselves. We sponsor letter writing parties, events where you can write them and uplift their spirits. And we provide third-party medical intervention. And I say someone has been down 40, 50 years, you can assume right there that they are our seniors, that they are elders dying in prison. And they have old age infirmities, COVID-19, the impact of hepatitis C, COPD, cancer. And so these are the things that Jericho really actively works on. Letters to parole commissions, many phone calls to governors, to parole boards, to campaign for their release. And it is effective to the extent that people do come out of jail as a result of the public attention that is given to them, and Jericho plays a vanguard role and to ensure that happens. So if you want to help out, we'll just recognize and see, learn who the freedom fighters are, from Mumia Abu-Jamal, the Imam Jamil Al-Amin, formerly known as A-Trap Brown, to Sundi Alakoli, Sada Shakur's co-defendant, still in prison. He's 84 years old, denied parole many times after being eligible for that. And many more freedom fighters. You want to know who they are and get in tune with their cases. Prisoner and getting responses, it beats reading a book about them. You are putting yourself in human touch with a live freedom fighter that you may read about as far as the end of the civil rights movement and the beginning of the Black Liberation Movement in our country in the 60s and 70s. So that's what I do. Brother Lee, I've begun to call myself a revolutionary administrator because the job is so much intense when it comes to calling and writing on behalf of these individuals to get them out of prison. And meet Maroon Schultz, been down, you know, almost 50 years in solitary confinement for 30 of those years, was released even though he's was a compassionate release. But as a result of a lot of public attention and scrutiny and demands for his release, even though he's anticipated to pass away within the next couple of months. And, you know, unfortunately, the saying is justice delayed is justice denied, but he is free with his family and loved ones. And that is the type of work that Jericho does. All right, so we're inviting you into that space. I want to pick up real briefly, Brother Lee, not as extensive as Sister Camille, because she gave an excellent breakdown on human rights. And for the record, I agree 1,000% with everything the sister said. It was a wonderful breakdown, a very important breakdown. So when we talk about genocide, there was a 2021 international tribunal in New York charging the United States government and its states with genocide against Black, Brown, and Indigenous people. And it was broken down into five categories: the police killing of Black, Brown, and Indigenous, the mass incarceration of Black, Brown, and Indigenous people, the holding of freedom fighters or political prisoners and prisoners of war in this country. The fourth charge was environmental racism and its impact on Black, Brown, and Indigenous people. And the last charge was health disparities and the lack of access to health care and the trauma from slavery on up until this very, very moment, and how all these five connect directly into the genocide that we've been experiencing for 400 years. a lot of times, and Camille broke down the Geneva Convention, 1948 Convention on the Prevention of Genocide. There's also a U.S. law, believe it or not, 18 U.S.C. 1091. I'll repeat it, 18 U.S.C. 1091, that parrots the 1948 Convention on the Prevention of Genocide. So this tribunal found the United States guilty of both. So that's on the civil level. And, of course, as Camille put out, the very, very importance and the expansiveness of our human rights abuses and that violation on the human rights level, as you know. This tribunal was held at the Malcolm X Betty Shabazz Education and Cultural Memorial Center in Harlem, New York, the old Audubon where Malcolm X was assassinated. In that very space, we picked up the baton and ushered this into the human rights arena, into the international arena. This was a panel of 9 jurists, many from different countries, so the scrutiny of different countries through their eyes was able to hear testimony from some 30 witnesses on a 90-page indictment examined by, led by attorney Nkechi Taifa. Nkechi Taifa, a black woman, led that charge. And we had the Howard University School of Law with attorney Justin Hanford and Bill Keith Wilkerson leading the pack and informing the indictment. This is very important. Somebody may say, well, okay. So back in 1951, December 17th, a year, 70 years ago, William Patterson and Paul Robeson, they also charged the United States of genocide successfully, you know, and the recharged genocide, the crime of government against the Negro people. But since that time, you know, the United Nations has never responded to that. And so this was a effort by almost 100 U.S. intellectuals and activists, and the petition was taken to the United Nations, France, and here we are still sitting today. But unlike the wonderful work of our sisters and brothers back in 1951, there was a movement behind this indictment, brother Lee and listeners. There was a movement involving many, many people, many, many organizations, and hundreds of activists on the ground. And the reason was so that we wanted to make this a people's tribunal with people involvement, so that after the verdict, and the verdict came down October 25th, 2 months ago, after the verdict, we have some specific initiatives, not just taking it to the United States Human Rights Council and them not doing anything. The United States is the big bully on the block, as you know. They don't even pay their dues in the UN, so there you go. But we also have some action plans. You know, we will be taken into federal court. Why would we be taken into federal court? Because it is very important that we constantly attempt to prove what has already been proven, as Sister Camille pointed out, as Brother Lee is always pointing out. But we have to always try and seek to educate our own people in an environment where there's so much apathy and complacency and buying into the narrative of how well off you are in a place called the United States of America. And those that are well off or think they are well off, not realizing that you're well off on the back of centuries of slavery and oppression and exploitation of the majority of people, not only in the United States, but around the world. So when we realize that, it makes us not quite sitting right with how we are. And that is not to say give up what you have, but as Camille said, we need to find our space and begin to really fight and struggle to make sure that human rights is a reality for all people. All people, right? And not at the expense of us, you know, turning our back and becoming complicit, you know, with the government's ongoing genocide of black, brown, and indigenous people. But it's important, Brother Lee, that we keep this narrative and this fight in the eyes of the people on different levels. A legal level, people kind of resonate with legalities. United States is guilty. A lot of times when we think about genocide, we think about a beginning and an end date, 4, 2, 3 years of something that happened, Bosnia-Herzegovina, the Hutus and the Tutu, what happened to the Jews with Adolf Hitler. We're able to quantify the date, the time, the people that was killed. We're even tracking down war criminals to this day. But when it comes to black, brown, and indigenous people, that genocide is a slow genocide that's been going on for centuries. And because of that, it's become institutionalized and normalized. You can't see it for looking at it, to be able to identify it. So this tribunal not only found the United States guilty of human rights abuses, that wording is not potent enough to really point out what the United States government has been doing to us and continues to do to us. But when you say genocide, it puts you in the same class of this disrepute of Adolf Hitler. Now that's a different narrative there. That's a different reality. That pokes you in the side and makes you open your eyes and say, holy, are you serious? Yes, we are serious. And the facts are right there before you. In not only the many George Floyds and Breonna Taylors, but the exploitation, the denial of health care, you know, our children, what's happening to our communities, the fratricides and the ignorance and how we feed and kill one another. You know, this whole psychic that we're in, this whole result of the vestiges of slavery right there. So that tribunal is very important to prove it on a legal level for people to level the playing field, to be able to make it easier for academics and neoliberals and liberals and society, which is the majority of people, by the way, in terms of thinking anyway. A lot of times activists say, we don't want to have nothing to do with them, but that means you don't want to have nothing to do with your family. Because I'd be daggone if they're not part of the liberals, too, in their thinking. The ones that are not at the table when we're in our activism on the streets. The ones that are not there at the meetings. The ones that are disconnected from what you are doing. You yourself and your own family. So when we talk about the reformers, we don't have anything to do with them or the neoliberal. Well, that's Black America. Because if it was revolutionaries, we wouldn't be in the pot that we're in right now. So therefore, we have to continue to wage our struggle, you know, to show, prove over and over and over and over and over and over again, you know, what's happening to us with the intention of having strategies laid out, as Camille laid out with the Alliance for Global Justice with Jericho. They used to be a fiscal sponsor of Jericho. I'm very familiar with this wonderful organization, and people need to be in tune with that. But we need to be able to tie people in, not only educating them and leaving them with nothing to do and wondering and just really all upset about with information that they're hearing, but be able to establish avenues for their involvement, you know, to be able to take what they learn and to become activists in their own space with their own capacity in their own way, you know, to contribute to the movement. So like the sister said, unity doesn't mean lockstep and sync, but it means that solidarity means that we are committed to doing whatever we can in a sincere way. So this tribunal, so I'm asking everybody to tune in. The charge of genocide is fuel for you, Brother Lee, for everybody listening. Once you go into the website for that, not only the Jericho website, which I gave, the JerichoMovement.com, but also Spirit of Mandela.org, www.spiritofmandela.org. You'll find all the ways to become involved in the development of what the post-tribunal actions. And one last thing I want to say, Brother Lee, very important. So I said we're going to take it into federal court. Yes, we will. All right. We understand we're taken into a justice system that is racist. We understand it. But many efforts, we realize the opposition against us, all right? But that's where we are in a place called the United States of America in 2021. But at the same time, you know, we have organized boots on the ground also to develop what we're calling a people's senate. So we're calling for your involvement to build this. And this senate will be representing like a very serious, progressive network of activists representing people in all 50 states. So the Alliance for Global Justice, the many organizations down south, northeast, Midwest, on the West Coast. You know, we're building alliances from the Black is Black Coalition, from the many different other formations. I'm getting brain dead for a minute. But many different formations that we're having to organize to come to a certain standard of agreement and be able to have our own elected officials to be able to represent the issues that really we need to represent so that we can begin. When we use the word D-E-M-A-N-D on anything, it'll become real. So when we say demand, daggone it, we're demanding it, and we have numbers behind our demand, not just something that comes out of the mouth of a brother or sister at a rally. We demand the release of political prisoners. There's only about 50 people out there. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about systematically and strategically networking with other networks and other organizations to build what we're calling the Senate. And why are we calling the Senate? Because in the psyche and minds of Black people, or brown people, indigenous people, that name is legitimate. It's not like a Black United Front. Oh, there you go with that leftist stuff again. But a senate is a name that's acknowledged around the world. I'm being, forgive me for being kind of facetious about it, but we thought about it and we wordsmithed this really down. When we say senate, it puts us on the same par, at least struggling to be, as the United States Senate, which is recognized, racist as they are. The United States Congress, as impotent as they are. Now we have our own Senate. And what that would look like, we're inviting everybody, Brother Lee, to become involved in the making of this historical initiative. So I'll leave it there. Again, my name is Jihad Abdul-Mumit, formerly a member of the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Army, formerly a political prisoner for 23 years, and chairperson of the National Jericho Movement. Those are just my credentials, not that I had to say it, because I wanted to recognize a person for what they do present time, not just what they've done in the past. So this is what we are working on right now, and we're inviting you to this process. At some point in time, Brother Lee, I'll be getting with you in probably be 3 or 4 months from now to see what actually, and I hope the COVID lifts a little bit so that we can maybe have some type of general assembly about this in Richmond. So some a little bit of building to be done. It is a protracted struggle, so we ask you to continue doing what you're doing. Support Sister Camille and the Alliance for Global Justice, and also tune in with the National Jericho Movement, and tune in with the Tribune, the 2021 International Tribune. I'm sure if you Google it, a zillion things will pop up. I thank you, Brother Lee, so much for the work that you're doing and for listening, audience, for hearing what I have to say, and I look forward to meeting those who I haven't met and working with you. Thank you so much. I greet you as I came. Assalamu alaikum.
And we thank you, Brother Jihad, for giving your perspective and waking the consciousness among our people around the importance of understanding human rights, particularly as it relates to our people, development, and justice. We thank you very much for your contribution to today's program. We thank you. But before you leave, real quickly, is there also a contact number they may can call someone or call you to make sure they connect with your movement and your organization?
Yes, thank you, yes, I don't. My number is my number, and it's so it's 804. It's a Richmond number. It's a Virginia number. 804-304-8595. When you call me, sisters and brothers, if you do call me, after you call and you don't get a pickup, then text that who you are. Because only reason, because my voicemail is oftentimes my secretary. And the amount of calls I get, if I don't recognize it, that will be at the bottom of the list. But if you send a text behind a call that's not answered, hey, this is Sister So-and-so, this is Brother So-and-so, I was calling in reference to boom, 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 I'll be right back at you. That'd be a good thing. So you call me and I don't answer at 804-304-8595. Then I have Brother Lee on, so if you call me, no, I answer that. But if I don't have your name on the call when it comes in because of the amount of calls, I just can't answer call. I'll be like, I have to get a divorce. I have to really bear this state. So that it is, 804-304-8595. Thank you, Brother Lee.
No problem. We thank you again to our listening audience. We listen, Brother Jihad Abdul-Mumit. He's a vice chairperson for the Jericho Movement. We'd like to thank him. And right now, what we're going to do, we're going to pause our calls with music with a message. And when we come back, we had the sister who's been on the front line for years and years and years. And this is Sister Empathy. She's the convener and founder of the Million Woman March and Movement. And she can share with us the work that she's doing and her understanding of the importance of looking at our struggle from a human rights perspective as it relates to our people, our community development, and justice. We'll be right back with Sister Empress. But right now, I feel it. I feel like we definitely been living on the front line. We'll be right back. This is MPH Radio. my mama, please, got me on living on the front line. But you don't have me born at the wrong time, because we understand this time is a time to struggle, a time to fight, a time to move forward, a time to make our contribution for the next generation. This is the thing to do. This is why we are trying to continually work towards filling in our missing pages of history so that our people can use our history as a guide to direct them for their future liberation and unification. Welcome to MPH Radio. We will continue our discussion today as we talk about this concept of human rights. Human rights, community development, and justice. We have with us now our sister, Empress Chi, who was the convener and founder of the Million Woman Movement in March. And one of the things about human rights, they often say, and I'd like my sister to introduce herself and respond to this question, is that they say women's rights are human rights. So my sister, I know you've been on the front line for years. You're a warrior. We'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. So talk to our people. Let's talk about what's up with human rights, why we must see our issue in the context of human rights. I know you got some issues that are going on under the banner of human rights. So give us some education, my sister. Welcome to MPH Radio again.
Oh, yes. Greetings, my brother, and thank you for the invitation and for all the great work that you and the family have continue to do over these years. We give thanks for that. This is really a important time. Well, all times are important, but this time period for us is extremely right at our hands to make certain moves. So there are times when you have the opportunity to do things that you will not have the opportunity at in the future or at other times. So we have to take full positive advantage of what is now in our midst, even though COVID, of course, has created quite a bit of uneasiness and other kinds of things. There's always a plus side or an advantageous side to most disasters or other kinds of things. And I dare say we now see what some of that is and are moving forward accordingly. When I say we, I'm talking about the original Million Woman March. And as you indicated, brother, we have now evolved into a global movement. We dare say we are the first global movement for women and girls of African descent worldwide. We were established, of course, in 1997 with bringing an approximate 2.5 million women and girls of African descent into Philadelphia physically, not just virtually, physically, during a time when there was no Facebook, Instagram, and all of that. We were able to accomplish something that for whatever reason most seemed to want to dismiss, but therefore a big surprise to realize that was not the thing to do. But it was to our advantage because sometimes when people know too much about what you're actually doing, it enables them to usurp or to, you know, create greater sabotage than what is already there. And that is what happened with the original Million Woman March. We were infiltrated several years back, which of course took us a little longer to bring our movement forward. We were able to, you know, finally put all of that out of our midst and able to move forward in establishing now this movement, which is what it was intentionally designed to be. And even though, yes, our primary focus is our women and girls, we have never excluded or had any intention of not making certain that that our families and communities and the masses of our people were always included in our operations. It's just like in any discipline, you have to make certain you departmentalize things. And when you deal with African liberation and justice, obviously there are various components. And so when we talk about women's issues, then that is one, just like we talk about youth or elders or what have you. So unlike some wanted to, you know, allude to that, you know, we were trying to be feminist and all this other stuff, you know, and that was an excuse not to support by the way, for some, and also to try to diminish the capability and the accomplishment. But we've always made it very clear. We started off with 10 platform issues. Those 10 platform issues did not just focus on women. It did, of course, including the abuse and violation of our women and girls. But it also talked about homelessness. It talked about mass incarceration, miseducation, the need for us to have our own independent schools. This was one of our initial, we had 10 platform issues. So they were there 24 years ago. Needless to say, in the issue of human rights, well, the Million Woman March, of course, made certain that John Conyers, Congressman John Conyers, was a speaker to present to the masses the issue of, at that point, H.R. 40 and the things relevant to reparatory justice, i.e. reparations. We also had as a speaker the co-chair of NCOBRA at that time, Sister Obadeli. So my point is that we have a history of being able to demonstrate our position in terms of African liberation, Black liberation in the U.S. and abroad, because at the Million Woman March, we also had the great Mother Winnie Mandela. And so we demonstrated at that time our intention, capability, and whatever else anybody thought they need to see. Unfortunately, that did not manifest into what we had hoped it would in terms of support and other kinds of things, the inclusion of other kinds of activities and so forth. But it turned out to be a good thing because we were able to learn so much. To fast forward, the issue of human rights, 4 years ago in 2017, at the time of our 20-year anniversary, we initiated on a national level officially our We Charge Genocide 21 project. At that time, we began to put in place what we now have, which is a mechanism to begin to address not only, of course, the 400-plus years of enslavement, of violations of our people. And note, I have to be very clear about that, because what helps to differentiate the We Charge Genocide 21 to make sure that there's clarity is that We are not advocating for other people or other issues. We're very clear and adamant about our position, and it is Black folks, people of African descent in the context of 400 plus years of enslavement in the U.S. Now, that particular project is specifically about and for that. It is not the inclusion of anyone else, not that particular project. Now, there are other things that we do that is applicable to other issues and other points of solidarity. We've always done that. Historically, you can see our work and see that. However, there comes a time when you have to deal with some specifics. If you are a doctor and you're serious, at some point you will select an area of specialty. And so, again, when you deal with certain matters, you have to identify the specific areas that you're going to operate in and from. Meaning, when we talk about human rights, and at this point we're talking about the We Charge Genocide, and note again, it's important to know 21, because when we picked up this mantle 4 years ago, we had already researched the work of Mother Callie House in the 1800s. Of course, that of Paul, as a matter of fact, our meetings before COVID was at the Paul Robeson House here in Philadelphia. That's where we were doing a lot of our meetings at, because we realized that the masses of our people did not know anything about these people, most. You talk about Callie House. Who's Callie House? Who's Queen Mother Moore? We stay connected to the Queen Mother Moore House over these past 24 years as well, and have studied her work, along with Dr. Robert Brock. Who's he? Along with Dr. Youssef Clyde. And, of course, Malcolm X. So we looked at these who came before us so that we're not trying to reinvent anything. We're merely making certain that we can advance the work that they did. And who's teaching this? Who's educating not each other, but the masses of our people? And so that's been our mission, to make certain that as we have these dialogues with one another, that we also make certain that, you know, Katisha, you know, Redding, or, you know, Brother Joe on the block, that they know what genocide is. It's not just a conversation that we're having, not what reparations or reparatory justice is. We have to make certain that our people in our communities know what we're talking about. We're talking about representing them in some manner, with different sessions, assemblies, and so forth, and they not have a clue about what the heck we're talking about. So our We Charge Genocide 21 project started in the hood, of course, with the intention and the capability to maneuver, globally. That was always designed that way. But we always look at the masses of our people first. That's how the Million Women March was started. That's why people couldn't understand how it got done, because they didn't understand the organizing strategy. And so we now have continued that process. And again, next year, we will commemorate 25 straight years of doing this work, of fighting for the liberation of our people, unapologetically, and note, without the influence, without the manipulation of other people. And that also includes without corporate sponsoring or grants. Now, this, again, is not something that you will hear much about, in this day and time. And I can tell you it has been grueling to do it like that. But when you're on a mission, particularly of divinity, particularly when we say it's from our ancestors, then you got to follow whatever that plan of action is. And so we've done that. So the Recharge Genocide 21 focuses on human rights violations. But no, 21. We have 21 points, 21 areas, 21 demands, 21 months of direct action. 21 because we're in the 21st century. And so we have to now look at what genocide is today. So we break it down to our people because we now have study groups. Friday, we'll be doing the Paul Robeson Human Rights Black Justice Study Group. We'll have a forum in recognition of that being the actual day, December 17th, 1951, when Paul Robeson, of course, took the We Charge Genocide petition to the United Nations in New York, William Patterson to Paris, France. So again, we educate our people about the work that others have done before us. So that session next Friday at 7:30 on Zoom, we'll talk about the legacy, the work of Paul Robeson, William Patterson, We Charge Genocide, 1951, and where do we go from here? Now note, 1951, the petition primarily focused on the beatings, the lynchings, the murders, et cetera, of our people by law enforcement and general society of white folks, period. It was groundbreaking. How do you document that kind of stuff, hundreds of names, ages, locations, in 1951? So 70 years later, we have to examine, what are we doing? When our people already demonstrated what needs to happen, what can happen, and certainly, you know, we have to really think very carefully as to why this work hasn't been brought forward. And who has held it up, by the way? Now, we know that the United Nations, of course, as a sister mentioned earlier, that the UN has not signed on to specific pieces of documents at the United Nations, but they have signed on to some other stuff. And we need to, again, be clear about that and utilize that as well. For example, there have been other kinds of documents that can be linked to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And so one of those documents is the ICCPR. Now, what that makes reference to, of course, is the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights.
CCPR. I'm sorry, ICCPR. And so the United States did sign that in 1977. The point being, even though certain, you know, specific documents have not necessarily been ratified or signed onto, there are other pieces that can, in fact, be looked at, examined, and you know, dealt with in that manner. And so this is one of the things that the We Charge Genocide 21 project is doing, along with establishing a movement for Black human rights. Now, we know that for some, they will specifically say human rights, and we understand that, and that's fine, and we support that, by the way. But again, we have to be very specific, because the claims that we are making as people of enslaved Africans, the descendants, and even indigenous Africans who were also violated in this land, we are the only ones that have a very specific claim, as well as grievance, as well as, you know, saying about what our violation has been. No one else can say that. And so we, you know, so we keep lumping everybody else's stuff into what, you know, is being said about the issue of human rights, then, you know, it can get a little murky, especially for those who are trying to learn and understand. But it also, for me, gives the enemy the capability to continue to play this game of dismissal. Bottom line is this. We look at the work that has been accomplished. Big shout out to Sister Deidre Farmer-Perlman, who did, in fact, establish and do a lot of research as pertained to the corporations that were involved in the transatlantic slave trade. And by the way, we'll be making a very important announcement very soon about the next filings. So with the We Charge Genocide 21, we looked at four areas. What we call a formula for remedy, we call it the R4J. The letter R, the number 4, the letter J. Why? Because we know that reparations, of course, is one, going back to Queen Mother Moore and others, is the word and the language and the concept that we were given, and we honor that. But also now we look at restitution. So the R... 4J represents reparations, restitution, the third one being retribution, and the last one being restoration. Each one of those are, in fact, specific areas in law. There is a reparatory or reparatory justice law apparatus. There's restitution as an element in law. There's also retributionary law, which focuses specifically on punishment, and, of course, there's restorative law. So, again, in examining the past and looking how we need to proceed in the future, this is what the We Charge Genocide 21 does. Again, 21 points. Homelessness, mass incarceration, gentrification is also genocide. And so we have taken the time in these past 4 years to examine, I just returned back from Chicago and Detroit, to examine the impact of ethnic cleansing in the form of gentrification, social engineering systemically in the 21st century as it pertains to our people, in removing us from very specific areas and relocating us or displacing us in other areas. So we've done a lot of research to identify how genocide now has happened in the 21st century as a result of gentrification in the modern day form. So again, we focused on 21 areas. Of course, environmental racism. Well, we have examples of that. Flint, the water, and of course other cities that most don't know about. And again, we are, you know, looking at that in terms of